Hey everybody, it's the Week in the Tackle podcast, the podcast where we tackled the previous week in football and or soccer and tackled the things that we thought were interesting. Nailed it. I'm Tom, and alongside me for this program is an MLS legend, a top broadcaster, a man who in his 40s still wears the cap of a 16-year-old. It is Brian Dunseth. Hi, Dunny, you all right?
I'm fantastic, Rennie. Good to see you, my man. I know we got a short amount of time for Horsey in the House and... what do we call him? Come on, Gary. Come on, Chris. Come on.
Yes,
whatever.
He did think I was Gary O'Reilly, the former Tottenham defender at the start of our Zoom call today, because, you know, he's just spent 3 hours looking at Gary O'Reilly, as I have. And it's hypnotic. He's a very handsome man. I'd love to know if the carpet matches the drapes. One day we'll find out. Before we start the program today, we've got to say congratulations to Tim Horsey, because not only is he the Horsey in the House, as Michael Bublé sings in the seminal children's program Moon and Me, the silly song as played by Collie Wobble, there's going to be a second Horsey in the House, because Tim Horsey this week managed to convince what I can only assume is a very desperate woman, to marry him. Tim, congratulations on your proposal. Tell us how it went. What did you do?
It's funny. You're so accurate. Everything you said there, Tom, just has to be desperate. But thank you, guys. Appreciate it. And appreciate all the kind words over the past couple of days on here in both FC 157. Kept it simple. You know, went to an Italian restaurant that we had for our second date. We went to the small little Italian place in Baltimore, and I just did it there. Pizza Hut, yeah. Actually, it was Papa John's. Come on now, we were Papa John's family.
Authentico Italiano.
Right. So yes. Popped the question there, and then we actually went to see a play at the Hippodrome in Baltimore. We went to see Clue, which was basically a remake of the 70s movie, which was incredible. Didn't really tell anybody. Thursday, surprised my parents, drove over there and surprised them, and then Friday celebrated with a weekend in Chicago, just kind of bouncing around Chicago doing some stuff. So it's been fun. It's been a fun couple of days, and now I'm smack dab back in reality trying to plan a wedding, which is just super fun.
Oh. Like the worst thing. Donnie, tell Tim just how bad it is to plan a wedding.
Great. Awesome.
Have a blast. Hey, can I give you one piece of advice? Just nod and say whatever you want, honey.
Look, that's the plan. But then it's like, what is your opinion on this? And I'm going to be like, I have to formulate some sort of thought on napkins. I'm not looking forward to that.
My advice would be go to Vegas, get married as quietly as possible, then invite me and Dunny to the party so we can do all the drink and eat all the s'mores.
Yeah.
That's what we need.
There are going to be so many s'mores. There are going to be so many s'mores at the wedding. You're going to travel all the way from the UK just to be a night guest, Tom?
Don't worry. Rennie's not going to remember the s'mores anyways. We're going to take a picture and remind him of it 3 days later. By the way, I done it a little bit backwards. I thought you would have maybe gone to had dinner and then gone to Clue and then maybe put her through like a little bit of a Clue type of game that ends with you dropping to a knee and being like, honey.
You could have murdered somebody and found the ring on the body.
You know, I wasn't that creative, unfortunately. That's why you guys next are wedding. Constantly on the mic. Yeah, the next one, I will be sure to murder somebody and then put the ring on the finger.
There's always a second chance.
That's true. Tim, congratulations. Now, congrats. Sorry, Tim.
And by the way, I think that's the first time we've seen Tim Horsey on the show. Like, we've kind of heard Horsey before, but this is like now that we're like on video and YouTube and Spotify, wherever you get your podcasts and you have like a video element, Horsey's like legitimately in the house for the very first time.
So during the program today, whenever we swear, we can see his reaction to thinking that's another 5 minutes of my life editing this fucking program. Anyway, there's a few things to talk about today on today's program from the last few days in football. I did want to start with this, even though it's probably not the best thing to start with, considering the time the show's going to go out. And as soon as this show is over, I'm heading off to Tottenham to watch the game. But, Danny, I did want to talk about Tottenham Hotspur. Not very much about the game against Burnley this weekend, but the game that's happening on the day we're recording, the Manchester City game, because... as you will know, as regular listeners will know, my brother-in-law is a big Tottenham fan, and I kind of use him as my conduit to Tottenham. We also have some great people like Danny Kelly and Paul Coit that come on our shows on Sirius and tell us the Spurs' perspective on things. Anyway, I got a line on some tickets for the game tonight. Biggest game of the year in lots of ways, plus the last home game of the season. So it's one of those ones that everybody wants to go to. And if you've tried to get tickets for Spurs, it is actually quite difficult. There's not many on the day tickets. People often don't put their tickets on the exchange. So it's quite difficult. And a lot of people I know try and get one-off tickets and simply can't get them. Anyway, had tickets for tonight off a friend of mine. Hospitality, no less. Not the top-tier Charlie Stilettano, I will change the result of the Real Madrid game because I'm Champagne Charlie levels. Yeah. Sorry, Clarence Seedorf, sit down. I'm off to the friends and family, the Champagne Tribune?
Tribunal, yeah, the Owner's like Tribunal, something like that.
Yeah. Owner's Tribune, that's it, yeah. That's it. Which is a great story. If you heard it this week? I'm not going to retell it here because you should subscribe to SiriusXM FC if you want that sort of content. If you're in the US and if you're in the UK,
sorry,
nothing I can do. I'm not doing it now. Anyway, I've been in the tickets and it wasn't that sort of level, but it was 2 pints. It's a nice bit of food and you're in a lounge. Normally he'd snap my hand off for these tickets, and he said, "Tom, I just can't go.
Scared.
I don't want to go." And I said, "Why? Yeah. Why don't you want them?" Because I was going to go to Chelsea when I knew West Ham were going to lose the other week. Because you know, Champagne, not busy. I've not got a great life. I'll come to anything. I'll go to the opening of an envelope. There's free champagne in it. He basically said, "I can't imagine going to a game where I don't want Tottenham to win." And he does not want them to win. He cannot go to this match and hope that Tottenham don't win it. Because if they do, it means that Arsenal on Sunday, if they beat Everton, which they will be champions. And I thought there might be a rare attitude. So I went on the ticket exchange before the football show today. And there are, as we record, 3 o'clock UK, hundreds, if not thousands of tickets available for sale on the exchange, which usually are not available. Dunny, Tottenham fans do not want to go. This game, Tottenham fans seemingly want Man City to win, not by a lot. And the only people in the world that want Man City to win this game are Arsenal fans. It's a weird old mix of things.
Yeah, it is amazing in a lot of ways. And I saw Big Ange Postecoglou, Kangaroo Jack, pontificate about, mate, I can't imagine why you'd want your team not to win a game and do all that fun stuff.
Sorry, is he Dick Van Dyke?
Well, it depends. If he's Australian Dick Van Dyke,
you thought that was good. Tim just said pretty good in the chat.
That was pretty good, Dunny. We give him a lot of shtick for his impressions. I thought that one was okay.
Are we kidding? Are you joking?
Rennie.
Dead serious.
Rennie. Okay.
Carry on. No, carry on. Carry on. Carry on your point, Dick.
Mate, why do they call you Danny? Listen, I just don't. I get it. I really do. It's funny because in this weird way, you start dripping into my brain. And it started with Varzar, and it started with this idea of taking the knucklehead and putting him inside the box and not letting him leave and making him ultimately responsible in the Howard Webb for everything that comes out with regards to decisions, because then that way we don't have a television show and Michael Owen and we have him saying, well, we would prefer that this would be a penalty. Yeah. And obviously this is a weekly thing. You know, you've dripped into my heart and soul, maybe about the FA Cup conversation, about what it should look like in a tournament format, because I've seen it in real time with League's Cup. So that's maybe in the future somewhere along the lines. But, you know, then ultimately into this conversation about Man City, I oddly agree with you once again. I think if Man City wins, they are doing something that's never been done before. But it isn't as iconic in a way as if Arsenal wins, because if Arsenal wins, all of a sudden it's bam, Invincibles, we're back. Everything's been terrible and now it's amazing. And Mikel Arteta, and look what he's done in the last 2.5 seasons versus Pep. Yeah, amazing. Yeah. Another Premier League title, which will absolutely matter to the history books. It'll absolutely matter to Man City fans. And it'll always have that weird kind of like asterisk mark next to it.
When they get taken off them, it'll matter.
Yeah, but is there really?
Whatever happens, Arsenal will have this title in like 4 years.
115 charges. And if they come back with nothing, oh my God, everybody involved should be fired. If you are going to put 115 charges at the doorstep of Man City and you come away with nothing, all of them got to be gone. All of them just got to be gone. But anyways, my point being is for Tottenham fans, for anybody else, for Liverpool fans, for like anybody outside of Man City, if Arsenal wins, that changes the narrative of the Premier League. Absolutely. 100%. It's not conceptual. It's factual. But if Man City wins, it's like, okay, well, this is part of the juggernaut that Man City and Pep Guardiola is, and they absolutely deserve all the credit in the world for what they're doing on the field. How they got there is a different conversation, but that'll just be part of the quad. The standalone for Arsenal, that changes perspective. So I understand this weird complexity. And the crazy part is there's still like maybe that little bit of hope for top four, but there's not. And it's Europa League and blah, blah, blah. So you need help. It would have been a lot easier had Aston Villa lost the other night. But yeah, it's weird. I get it. I want to go see the game. By the way, I can't wait till Heroes and Villains, because Tottenham and that lap of honor. I'm just giving you my insight. You might fall into the villain category.
That's the hook. Will the tease deliver? Find out later in the show. Now, we are going to be a bit late on this, but I do want to mention it because as we record, I'm not. I really hope Tottenham have been unbelievably petty here, because firstly, the Postecoglou response in the press conference that he gave, I thought was really pathetic and unnecessarily rude. I'm always saying this because of, you know, my job and my industry, but being rude to reporters who have no power in the exchange, I think doesn't say much about some of these managers. And the reporter basically said, there are some Tottenham fans who, you know, would rather Tottenham lost tonight and Arsenal didn't win the league. Ha 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 ha. Uh-huh. And he was like, what? How many? How many? When? Give me the numbers. Where's the polling data? And it's like, well, no, you know this. Everyone knows this. You don't need to be this way. No one thinks the players are going to throw the game. Like, literally nobody thinks that. We're just asking you a question about some fans who have voiced the opinion that it would be awful for them if Tottenham win the league. So that exchange annoyed me. And we aren't
But really quick, doesn't it really show like the bubble that we're all in, right? Doesn't it show like the different silos and spheres that we're operating in? Like for us as broadcasters, as pundits, as media members, we're kind of taking the pulse and the temperature of what social is and what all the YouTube videos are and TikTok and Instagram and how people are kind of putting out. And it's not that they're creating false narratives, but they're just giving their opinions of how they feel. But then you've got players that probably have a better sense, a better finger on the pulse of what's happening outside of the locker room, but still have obviously everything, the grit, the determination, the pull for success inside the locker room. And then you have these managers that probably are made aware of made aware from their PR staff about what potential questions are coming in, but they don't give a flying squirrel about what anyone else thinks because they feel like they're kind of bulletproof from speculation and like kind of the spotlight of what's happening. And I think that response from him just shows, I think, two factors. One, he doesn't give a toss what anyone thinks in a way until it kind of like hits a soft spot and then he reacts. And number two, I think that his primary focus is just a trajectory. And they're not anywhere close to where the ending part is, but they're in the infancy of this trajectory. So I understand and I agree with you. I think you can always tell a lot about a person by the way they treat people they perceive to be below them. I think that says everything about who that person is. But I think it does show, again, these different silos that we're in. Manager, worried about players, worried about results, worried about his job. Us as press members and media members understanding what the conversation is and then keeping an eye on both the fan base and then the team itself and then understanding the complexity of that unique balance. I don't think the question was unfair. I agree with you. I think it should be asked because it's something that everybody's talking about, whether he likes it or not.
It's happening. And, you know, people say, as Gary, the former Tottenham defender, said to me earlier today, like, oh, you know, I can't imagine a Tottenham fan wanting their team to lose. Well, I can imagine wanting my team to lose. I can absolutely imagine it because in the wider picture, Tottenham are going to finish fifth. Whatever happens on Tuesday night, they're going to finish fifth in the Premier League. They ain't going to catch Aston Villa now with Villa's point on Monday Night Football. They are not going to win both of their games, and Villa aren't going to lose against Crystal Palace if it becomes a necessity to win at the weekend. I just cannot see that scenario happening. And so it's nothing's going to happen here for Tottenham. So in the macro of it all, Arsenal winning the league. Let me tell you this, right? I'll tell you a short story. Tim's heard this a few times before. When I was at university in about 2004, 2005, Invincibles time, a lot of my friends were Arsenal fans. So, so many of them. And they're still good friends of mine now, but f***ing hell, didn't they make life hard for us? Sorry, Tim. You know, they had the best team at that point in England. They were fantastic. They had actual Thierry Henry. They just had Dennis Bergkamp and Ian Wright and Patrick Vieira and a period of incredible, not only success, but also quality. They'd knocked Man United off their Perch had Arsenal at that time. It was a great rivalry and they were brilliant. But the amount of times I used to sit at parties or you go out for a few drinks, you watch the football, and I'll never forget a friend of mine. He'd be like, Tom, listen, mate. Yeah, you don't understand. Yeah, you don't get it. And I was like, what don't I get? What don't I get? And he'd be like, listen, mate, we don't just play football, yeah? Like, you don't get it. We don't just play football. We play Arsenal ball, yeah? And that would be replicated by so many of these people who even now, 20 years after winning the title, are still, Christ, you just see my phone after Declan Rice went to Arsenal. It went into meltdown. And I wasn't even that bothered about it because you knew it was coming. Mm. But it was still, even when I was accepting of it, they were still like, yeah, but fuck you, right? You know? Because we're Arsenal when you're not. Yeah? No? And it was like, yeah, I know. It's okay. It's fine.
Sorry, Tim.
Like, you've taken the best player. You paid the money. It's fine. And they still just wouldn't. So I can envisage it. And we're not the biggest rival. So, we're not in that scenario. But if we were, I can absolutely see it. And I really hope, and again, we're recording before the game, and I'm sure this hasn't happened, but I want the two teams to come out and Cigarettes and Alcohol by Oasis is playing at full volume around the Tottenham Hotspur Stadium. I want every Tottenham fan to be wearing sky blue or a friend's Manchester City shirt. I want 60,000 people singing Blue Moon. No. I saw you standing alone. I want every touch by a Tottenham player to be booed vociferously by everyone. I want Romero to be told, foul him, give a penalty away, foul him. I want Vicario to do an Emi Martinez and throw one into his own net to rapturous cheer from the South Stand.
Of course,
none of this is going to happen. But like a banner maybe to be unfurled and it'll be like, do it for North London. Do it for all of us. Do it for Martin Jol and for Jurgen Klinsmann.
Martin Jol.
Do it for George Graham.
AVB.
Do it for Andre Villas-Boas, who was always very rude to me. Do it for, who else they had? Juan de Ramos, is that a real one?
Juan de Ramos,
who was the other
one?
Santiago Vergini, was that one? No, that's not right, is it? Who they have? Santos? I forget his name now. Do it for Harry Redknapp.
What about Ozzy?
Do it for Ozzy Ardiles and Ricky Villa. You know, just, we need this. So be petty about it. I hope they're petty about it. Anyway, we'll see what happens there. Let's move on to a story about waterfalls. Can you name the top four largest waterfalls in the UK, Danny? I can only name one.
One out of four, and it's probably number three or number four in England, and that'd be Old Trafford.
Well, the largest waterfall in the United Kingdom is Courtney Sprout.
Okay.
Courtney Sprout. I think she's also a supermodel in the 60s. I'm not sure. But that's a 76-metre waterfall. The second highest waterfall in the United Kingdom is 70 metres. That's Cannontine Falls.
Mm.
The third largest waterfall is Cauldron Snout, 60 metres. The fourth waterfall of size in the UK is Old Trafford, from stadium roof to seats at 55 metres. Now, it rains in Manchester, okay? And many of you have been to Manchester listening.
Dumps, yeah.
It always rains. Even in the summer, it's sort of grey. It always feels sort of wet. Geographically, I think that's just an issue with where it is. Nothing you can do. It's always wet. But when it rains, it is absolutely biblical. So I have some understanding of, like, you know, you can't defend against the weather sometimes. Mm. But when we saw this waterfall for the first time, like 3 years ago, I assume they might try and fix it. And it's got so bad now, Danny, the leakage at Old Trafford. Declan Rice was having a shower whilst walking into the changing room, not into the showers, because the away changing room had a leak in the roof. And again, they had like a month's rainfall in 20 minutes. So this was a biblical rainstorm, but it was kind of on point in terms of signifying what's happening at Old Trafford.
Yeah, it's funny. When Sir Jim Ratcliffe and Ineos came in, one of the things that we were talking about was obviously the squad, right? We were also talking about kind of what this needed to look like for Carrington and the future of Carrington. We were also talking about what this needed to look like at Old Trafford. And obviously, there's a five-person short list that are focused on whatever, either the redevelopment of Old Trafford or building next door to Old Trafford and building a super stadium, much like we see down at Tottenham Hotspur. What I thought was, I guess I assumed, was part of the immediacy of this takeover also included making sure that the stadium was okay, right? I mean, it was less about expansion. It was more about stability. And it's funny, I actually, one of the things, and I don't remember if I brought this up either here or on Counterattack, but I remember when it finally was rubber stamped and went through that Sir Jim Ratcliffe's, his bid had been officially accepted and it had been able to move on. That part of this was, I remember saying, I was like, yeah, but you know, the roof, we got to take care of the roof too. And I think it was Miola just started laughing at me. Like, come on, man, there's a bunch of other things you got to worry about. And that's big old Wreck-It Ralph hands, because they're like the size of like two hands all like wrapped in one. And it was kind of a joke, but it wasn't a joke. And I agree. Listen, you know what's crazy is if that game would have kicked off 30 minutes later, they would have had to call that game off.
Yeah.
And it would have probably been a blessing in disguise for both of those teams, because that game, Arsenal, that was one of their, I don't know, least impressive performances of the season. And they grind out a 1-0 win against a team that a couple chances and 647th center back combination this season. So yeah, I couldn't believe what I saw. And then to see the, and it wasn't even, it was outside. I don't know if you saw the fans were like literally like jumping in, like creating ponds. And they were just like jumping into the water and like getting up and like washing his head like he was at a lake in a camping trip. Or to your point, the visitor's locker room as Declan Rice was walking in and just getting dumped on, just trying to get to his locker to grab his stuff. And you think about like the technology and their phones and their waters and all the things that are their wallets and everything. So, yeah, man, I mean, I get it. It's weather. But it just shows you again, you know, how little the Glazers really were concerned about what was going on at Old Trafford outside of slapping lipstick on a pig every once in a while with regards to paint on the outside of the stadium.
Well, on the upside, Jim Ratcliffe has made the staff come back to work 5 days a week, even if that doesn't suit their lifestyle when they're going to, you know, struggle to pay their mortgage and whatnot, and made them tidy their desks. So that'll sort it. quick one on how many people they're going to be able to sell to Saudi Arabia this summer. Casemiro, Varane's gone. Anyone else?
Not enough. How long we got? Where do you want to start?
20 seconds. You got 20 seconds.
I mean, please, for the love of God, Anthony Martial, figure out what you're going to do with him. That's something that should have been. Him. Right?
Is he still there?
He's still there. He hasn't played since like November.
He can fix the fucking roof. What's he doing? Sorry, Tim.
He's on like 250 a week. I mean, yeah. Listen, they need some serious help. I mean, remember going in the summer is about Harry Maguire. They can't even afford to lose Harry Maguire right now, not because of what he means on the field, just because they need a body with a heartbeat to play as a center back. Again, game model, practice model, whatever this looks like. Is he your guy? Is he not your guy? Brand new people, you know, Ashworth, Wilcox, Omar Barada, all these guys. If there's ever a time to make a change, this is a time to make a change. But is he malicious, Erik ten Hag, with kind of the aggressiveness we've seen in some of the press conferences where he's banning people for asking questions? Or is this he-he-ha-ha Erik ten Hag that we saw in the last 24 hours where he seems to be friendly with everybody, understanding that you got to be a good manager, but you also got to be kind of the inspirational kind of voice and front man for not only Manchester United, but for Sir Jim Ratcliffe and Ineos? I think that's something we really haven't talked about. But I think the management of the press is going to be something that they're going to want their figurehead to have some type of connectivity, even when things are going wrong, not just be, you know, glum and bitey, you know, biting back to any questions that are placed his way.
On the upside, it looks like Man United will probably finish eighth, and that means they won't qualify for the Conference League, and that means they haven't got to whinge about playing Hash and Kosh and Shonken in July. So that's good news.
By the way, can we just both acknowledge how lucky I am? Because God forbid if Manchester United would have qualified for Conference League, I would have never fucking heard the end of it. Sorry.
Yes.
I would have never heard the end. And you know, it's even more beautiful. The fact that I avoid it and Boley, Igbali, and Clearlake spend $2 billion. Chelsea's going to have to play in Conference League. It brings tears of joy to my eyes.
And it will cost them money to be in it, which they don't have.
Oh, it's beautiful.
It's going to be fun.
Imagine those Google searches. We're going f***ing where? Sorry, Tim.
Well, I think that, well, the fans are going to love it, by the way. They're going to have a great time going to, weirdly, Albania and Afghanistan these games. They're going to have a lot of fun. Listen, I want to talk about Aston Villa for a few minutes. Low-key, maybe the best story in the Premier League this season. A couple of late goals by Duran Duran at the end of the game on Monday night because Villa were hungry like the wolf. And in an ordinary world on planet Earth, this would be one of the biggest stories in football, but they really are the wild boys of the top four. They had a view to a kill in the front of the goal, and they're notorious in many ways for winning games like this season. It's a matter of feeling whether you enjoy this sort of thing or not. But when they won the game, it was a new moon on Monday. And is there something I should know? Yes, Aston Villa are going to be in the Champions League next season. That's what happens tomorrow. Girls on film.
Girls on film.
Couldn't make that one work. I want to ask you about the way they played,
great
Danny.
Stuff, by the way.
You enjoyed it. Someone had to. I also couldn't make the reflex work, but to be fair, that should have worked because it was a reflex finish by Duran Duran. It was all there. It was all there for me. It was laid out, and I couldn't put the record on. Anyway, the way they play is weird, and I think people are just noticing it. And I don't know whether it's because we've all been wrapped up in other stories and Man United's waterfall and stuff. Yep. But I've spoken about this a few times. I've done Villa a fair amount, and the first time I noticed it was the Man United game, December 27th or whatever it was. And what they do is so weird, Danny, and I need you to explain it to us a little bit with your tactical head on, because in football over the last like 20 years, 10 years, the gegenpressing era, we have had high lines and high press. We've also had, before that was low block and no press. If you think of this season, you might have Liverpool and West Ham, for example, right? What Villa do is something no one else in England is doing, and maybe listeners will know other teams in other countries that are doing this, but I don't. They do high line but no press. Yeah. And a bit of data that backs that up if you want it. In terms of distance run in games, on average this season, Villa are the lowest of any team in the league, 107-kilometre cumulative running in the team. That's 20th. In terms of pressures across the field, they are bottom. They do not press you. 145 times this season has happened. Final third pressures, as in they're playing out from the back, let's get them. 19th of 20. They don't do it. High turnovers, win the ball up the field with that high press. Yeah. They don't do it. 19th in the league. Through balls against them, the highest in the league, on average of 3.5 per game. And opponents being offside, the highest in the league, an average of 4.5 per game. If you look at a graph of all the teams in the league, they are nowhere near anyone else. No one else doubles up like that on both of those tactics. Why doesn't anyone else do it? And why has it worked so well, do you think?
Yeah, I'm not sure, because I think everybody, you know, we do these things, Rennie, where, and I'll equate it to going to these NSCAA college conventions that we used to go to with SiriusXM that were kind of coincided with an MLS draft back in the days. And Tony Miola and myself, we would sit in the lobbies and have beers with friends and people that were in the game. And you'd hear MLS coaches, you'd hear college coaches, you'd hear scouts, you'd hear kind of like all of these media members. And all of a sudden, like every year on repeat, it would be like something like, yeah, you know, we're looking for a true six, like just a pivot, like stuck in hard ankle biter. And then the next one would be like, well, this year, you know, it's all about sevens. If you can find a seven that can like invert his run centrally and then overlap at times, game changer. And it was like, oh, this year it's about like, we're not going to play with a real nine. We're going to be playing with false nines. And, you know, you don't have to be as big as false nine, like as a real nine. Like you can just be more dynamic and darty, and that'll like pull the center backs apart. And you don't know where to step. You don't know where to drop. You don't know what you're doing as defense. And like, so every year there's, and all of a sudden it would be like, you would hear it start trickling into other conversations. Like somebody would say something and would be like, oh my God, that's revolutionary. And we're going to play a three diamond three, three in the back, a diamond in the midfield, and then three up front. We're going to be so difficult to, and we're going to be numbers up in the midfield. It doesn't matter how you play against us. And it would just be this kind of like thing all the time. And everyone would like geek out on it. And it would be like the nameplate of a conversation for like the next 2 months. So what's interesting is I think now, as we kind of do the evolution, like you and I, we get the starting lineups, right? And we do our best to kind of give fans an idea of how a team's going to set up. Yeah. Is it a 4-4-2? Is it a 4-2-2-2? Meaning that the two defensive midfielders are going to protect the four. The two wingers are going to play higher up, but then you're still going to have like a striker and a 10 underneath. You know, a 3-5-2, a 3-4-3, a 3, you know, like you can go on and on, 4-4-2 with the diamond, all these things. but I feel like everyone has an identity. But a lot of this is now changing. Well, we'll defend in a 4-4-2, but we'll actually attack in a 3-4-3, meaning one of our outside backs is going to get forward, we're going to overload, and then that opposite side winger is going to get all the way in. You know, so I think what we're seeing is an evolution of game models. But the press is interesting because, for example, a stifling press, like when you turn the ball over, and that, you know, we call it the 5-second rule. For 5 seconds, if you can chase, if you can force the ball, and you already know who's the weakest player in possession across the back line, if you can kind of shutter that ball over to that one player within 5 seconds, then you can jump. Then you know he's not comfortable playing out of the back, so he's probably going to play long. So you know your right back and your right-sided center back is going to be able to deal with any type of long ball. You know the moment that he's going to hit it, defensive midfield is going to turn, he's going to back press, and you're going to win the set, either the first or the second ball. You're going to retain possession, then you're going to start over. But if you don't press, and you're kind of still high and you're still comfortable, the idea is what I would suggest with Aston Villa, you're trying to minimize any simple ball like through the midfield. You give them the width. It's kind of this umbrella effect. And you say, okay, try to beat us through our numbers. But if not, we'll give you the width. We'll give you the idea that you can hit that diagonal up over the top and we'll still collapse and deal with it. And I think those are some of the things that I see when I watch Aston Villa, that yeah, they'll try to press, but it's kind of like a half press, but it's more about a shape press, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
And I think that's one of the reasons why, to your point about statistically what you're saying, they're not necessarily winning the ball that high up the field. They're not winning it with consistency. They are giving balls up over the top because they're a little bit more compact, but they have the athleticism to deal with it. But I also think they're a streaky team. I also think this is a mood team. I think it's a confidence team. And I think you could see it in the previous, what, 4 results that they've had most recently, because with the run of form that they've been in this year, there's no reason they should have got the doors blown off by Olympiacos. And credit to Olympiacos, they lost it in the first leg. Aston Villa, they did not win it in the first leg. But again, they show what they're capable of doing. You know, Duran coming off his move from Major League Soccer and the Chicago Fire. We talked about it when he was here. Huge, huge potential. You're seeing him continue to evolve and grow into the player that he potentially could be now at the Premier League level. A fun, 3 minutes to be down 3-1 and end 3-3. But again, I agree with you, your initial point, because there's been so much havoc about United and Chelsea and even Newcastle to an extent. I think in an odd way, Aston Villa and what Big Ange Postecoglou has been doing with Tottenham, Aston Villa has absolutely benefited by not having the immediacy of the spotlight over their shoulders for the entirety of the year.
Yeah, I think everyone just thought they were going to stumble at some point. Everyone thought they would fall out at some point, and they haven't done it. It's an incredible achievement, and the way they've played has been interesting, to your point, laying it out there. We'll see how they cope next year. And as you mentioned, it's funny how few people seem to have got it in the same way Olympiacos did, where they were just like, do we have anyone fast up front?
Yeah.
We do. Well, let's play him in then. And they kept on doing it and doing it. And that El Kabi scored 5 of all the goals in the
4 or 5
legs.
Yeah.
Basically half of them are the same goal. And they kept catching him. It was weird. Listen, I wanted to ask you about another quick thing. And that's Jesse Marsh. we're speaking about him weirdly on Monday's show. Whatever happened to Jesse Marsh? We were thinking about doing a Carmen Sandiego thing with Jesse. Well, maybe he heard the program because he's taken the first job that came up after the show, and that was to work at Canada. But here's what's interesting about it for me: he's not manager. Jesse Marsh is going to be known as the MLS Canada men's national team head coach. This is due to philanthropic contributions from the 3 Canadian MLS teams. On an official statement from the philanthropic support angle, they say the appointment of Marsh is assisted by these contributions from the owners of the 3 Canadian-based MLS clubs, Vancouver Whitecaps, Joey Saputo, and Maple Leaf Sports and Entertainment, and supplemented by other private donors. Now, this sounds super weird to me, so I want you to explain it a bit to us. But I did get a note from a guy called Dan who was listening into the football show on Tuesday. And he said, here in the US, you get college head coaches at Ivy League schools where the official title is an endowment. A benefactor finances the salary of the coach and their name is attached to the official title of the job. For example, you could be Thomas J. Rennie, head coach of men's basketball at such and such school. Explain that to me, and what's going on with Jesse Marsh? What's this job?
Yeah, I mean the college thing. I mean the donations are wild, especially now with NIL and everything that's happening over here, where athletes are actually getting paid now. It's actually legal for college students to get paid, or college athletes to get paid.
And that's new. That's new. Like last 3 or 5 years.
I think it's the last 3 or 4 years is where it kind of started. But now, I mean, some of these college quarterbacks are getting paid $10 million a year.
Is this the same controversy that I remember seeing on the news where, like, if someone bought you a hamburger, you weren't allowed to even take that?
Well, Reggie Bush had his Heisman stripped from him because of money that allegedly was paid to him and or his family. But it sounds like they're going to give him his Heisman back. You know, Matt Leinart and Reggie Bush at USC were like the 1-2 punch. And both of them, there was kind of like weird allegations or whispers surrounding them. And I forget the kid's name right now at USC, but he had like this penthouse that was worth like $7 million, and it was his.
And Caleb like, Williams, for those Caleb that are going to scream at Dunny.
Well, I don't pay attention to the throw ball. But yeah, so, okay, take away the college stuff.
Yeah.
The reality for Canadian soccer, the national team on the men's and women's side, historically have had difficulties with finance. And even with the run that the Canadian national team had through World Cup qualifying in 2021, where they ended up top of CONCACAF qualifying, when they did their CBA with the men's sides and the women's sides, you know, for example, if you're Alphonso Davies and Canada is selling an Alphonso Davies jersey, you kind of want a cut of that, right? You feel as though they are benefiting off of you being Alphonso Davies of Bayern Munich, that plays for Canada. So, you know, there's more of a split. There's more of like a recognition of what your national team, not fees, but what your bonuses are. And that put them into even more difficulty, even to the point where I believe there was a window, an international window, where Canada wasn't playing because financially it was an at-risk cost for them. So when Jesse Marsh comes over, and again, as long as I can remember, even coming through the under-20s, I always remember the Canadian guys complaining about what was happening up there, that the finances weren't there. Because the attraction for Canadian soccer was not the same as it is here for, you know, the United States. So anyways, get past all of this. Canada, from what I can tell, didn't have the money to match what it was going to take for Jesse Marsh to get in his car, turn his car on and drive to the airport. He's been living over in Italy since being fired from Leeds with his family. It sounds like, as you said, Toronto, Vancouver, and Montreal have all been a part of this in terms of investing into Jesse Marsh, because the better that the Canadian national team does, obviously it benefits those three teams north of the border. And ultimately, I think Jesse had a couple of options. He's a good manager, and I think people were interested in him, but I would suggest that Jesse had to be really, really smart with his next decision. And when you think about that, you can be the head coach of a team at the World Cup. I mean, they're going to be hosting the World Cup. So, and by the way, there's a weird tit for tat that's been going on between Jesse Marsh and Greg Berhalter. These were the two guys for the U.S. men's national team job that, if you went onto social media, it was, why can't we have Jesse Marsh? And then when Jesse Marsh got fired, people would say, well, that's why we can't have Jesse Marsh, you know, with regards to who should be the U.S. men's national team head coach. But you even go back to, what was it, the Nations League final. Jesse was at the dais, or at the desk, for CBS Sports. And as he was kind of going through kind of the different combinations about, I think it was Tyler Adams, or it was somebody who wasn't playing. And he said, Jesse said something to the effect of, it was about fitness and health. Like, should you play him? Should you even bring him in? Is it the right time? And Greg, out of nowhere, kind of said publicly something the effect of, yeah. And people would question why you wouldn't bring in a guy like Tyler Adams when you put it. And I believe it was Tyler Adams. I could be mistaken, but whatever.
Needling what Jesse Marsh had said.
Like unprompted, kind of like brought it back out. And that became kind of like, even our own on SiriusXM FC Channel 157 Counterattack, Tony Meola got drug into the conversation because he was in that conversation at the desk and his Twitter handle was lighting up. And I thought it was amazing. So yeah, it's,
This you were leading that with your burner accounts, weren't you?
Oh, yeah, for sure. Loving it. I actually sent him a message. I was like, holy crap, your phone must be blowing up right now. He's like, what are you talking about? And I was like, dude, check Twitter, check your mentions. And he calls me back. He's, what the f-? Sorry, Tim. He's just scrolling. It's just, boom, no, boom, boom. But yeah, I'll tell you what, the very first time the U.S. plays Canada, if whether that's in a friendly or that's in a like a, an official competitive environment, the build up to that game is going to be fucking wild. Sorry, Tim.
I know. Didn't enjoy that one. We've done quite a lot now. Listen, let's get to heroes and villains. Let's give us your hero of the week. Who you got for us?
So I'm going to go with three just because it's collectively at the end of the season. I'm going to say Cole Palmer, Martin Odegaard, Phil Foden. I don't know how you justify who's the best, who's the most valuable, who's the player of the season. But just shout out to those three players. I think when with regards to consistency, opportunity, and how important they've been to the team. Yeah, Cole Palmer, Odegaard, Phil Foden, not necessarily in that order. I just want to acknowledge some fantastic young attacking players over in the Premier League.
Well, we do have another show next week. And so you can give us your hero. Nail it down for next week and give us one for heroes.
I'll see if I'm in the mood.
Season's not over yet, mate. I know it's over for you and for me, but for other people, there's still a season.
Just wait till
going.
I get to my villain. Hold on. We'll talk about the season being over.
My hero of the week is Steve Parish, the chairman of Crystal Palace. And the reason I picked Steve Parish is that they sacked Roy Hodgson and really boldly hired Oliver Glasner. Now, I think the recent run of form is a bit of a misnomer. I think next season Palace will not be as good as they are now. Plus, unfortunately, they'll find a way. Life finds a way, right? Where are they now? Yeah. They've gone from relegation threatened to 12th. You know, 12th, it's just going to happen.
Every year, rinse and repeat.
But as we know, Bayern Munich have been floundering since Uli Hoeneß, the convicted tax evader, decided to come out against Thomas Tuchel and be like, you can't coach, you're useless, you're sacked. Maybe he's right, maybe he's wrong, but maybe don't say it in public. You know, keep it to him. Maybe you're the problem. And weirdly, no one wants to work for Bayern because of how badly they have treated managers in recent times. Julian Nagelsmann dangled the rod, then pulled it away before the fish could take a nibble as... Renewed at Germany, Hansi Flick don't want to go back. Ralf Rangnick has turned them down. No one wants the job, and so Bayern now going down the list were like, anyone else? And they were like, what about this Oliver Glasner guy who won the Europa League with Frankfurt 2 years ago? He's at Crystal Palace, you know, that team that always finished 12th. All right, let's go and get him. Hello, Crystal Palace. Yeah, it's Bayern Munich here. Jawohl. Yes, I'm calling about your manager. We want to offer you about 18 million euros to take Oliver Glasner off you. How do you feel about that? And Steve Parish was like, well, lovely to hear from you, Bayern. It's great that you've heard of us. That's 100 million euros, please. If you want our manager, that's what it'll cost. You can have him. It's 100 million euros. He's got a 4-year contract. Let us know. Keep us posted. No further negotiation. Okay, bye then. Bye. Yeah. Cheers. Bye. Bye.
No.
Happy to Zane. And it doesn't seem like Bayern are willing to, but they just thought 18 would probably do it. And Steve Parish just told them to fuck off. Sorry, Tim, which I thought was excellent. So there we go.
Well, all he had to do was tell him his name was Olivier and maybe it worth 100 million instead of.
Oh, yes. I heard
18.
You screwed this up. Yes. Yeah, I heard you screwed that up. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. I did. I said Olivier. And he's like, it's Oliver. And I was like, well, Olivier would have been worth 100 million. Yeah. My villain of the week, because the season's already over, I went with the Lap of Honor by Tottenham, Big Ange, getting the families down on the we beat Burnley. What? Man City? Hey, we beat Burnley. I'm almost positive, and I could be wrong. I'm just a dumb American that doesn't actually live in the neighborhood of the team that I support. But Lap of Honors usually are, I don't know, last game of the season, last home game of the season. Yeah.
Yeah. Say goodbye to some players that are never coming back. Say goodbye to the manager who's been sacked.
Tuesday, Tottenham against Man City.
I didn't notice that. I didn't know they did that. That's because all the fans aren't going, as previously established. It's all City fans and tourists.
Lap of Honor.
Everyone there who's there on Tuesday will be like, who's this lot in the white?
Yeah.
Does anyone know who these are?
Why is everyone doing the pose, man? And there's one guy just facing everyone going like this.
Well, that leads me quite nicely to my villains of the week. Number one, Noel Gallagher, Oasis legend. However, he is cool, but also when you go into the football crowd, you can't be too cool. You've got to be taken away and swept away by the melee of it all. But to be fair, the Poznan is super lame and it's stolen off Lech Poznan. It's their celebration. That's why it's called the Poznan. In the same way that Man City have stolen football from us, they've also stolen the only cool celebration they've got from another team. Maybe they paid for it. I don't know. It'll come out in the filings, I'm sure. We'll find out from the Swiss Ramble. But Noel Gallagher was standing there. And I love Noel Gallagher and Oasis and all that. But, you know, maybe it's bad on the knees. You know, he's nearly 60, Noel. You know, it's not going to be easy to do the Poznan. It's, I can't even go up the stairs without feeling agony in my joints. So maybe it's one of those things. So he's part villain. The other part is Man City have already sucked all the joy out of football. Pep Guardiola's football is so... it's so tepid and dull and rubbish. I hate watching it. I can't. Them being 2-0 up, I would rather watch American football than watch Man City 2-0 up. It's so boring. The domination of possession, nothing happens. It's so just, oh, gross. Just Pep, go. Just go. Just go to Serie A and take over someone who hasn't got the biggest budget in the league. Maybe take over Bologna. And let's see what happens. Take over Crystal Palace and see if you can finish higher than 12th. Go to MLS where it's a pretty even field, but don't take over Miami. And let's see, you know, you're the greatest coach ever. You proved it. You are too good for us. So fuck off. Sorry, Tim. But the other thing of it is the fact they've stolen joy from us so much that Josko Gvardiol is on a bloody hat trick, the kind of left back defender. And they get a penalty in the 96th minute of a game that's so dead, it's got necrosis. Like, it's been so dead for so long, right? Like, it's got rigor mortis, this game. It's everyone's gone. Everyone at Fulham's off down the crab tree, eating their hummus. And they get a penalty in the 96th minute, and Gvardiol's like, can I take this? And Kyle Walker and Julian Alvarez like, no, we have a defiant penalty taker. Mm. Oh, come on! Come on.
Would have been the first defender in history, right? The bag of hatties?
First defender in Premier League history. The first one I can recall, I think there's a couple. We looked at this recently. Alvin Martin did it for West Ham against Newcastle in 1986. And there was one in like 1991. It might be Steve Staunton, but I'd need to check my notes somewhere. But it doesn't happen. And they've got a penalty and the game is over and it's the last kick. And they didn't let him take it. Haven't you taken enough from us, Manchester City? You know, we already can't now listen to Oasis without thinking about your 115 charges. You know, I can't even enjoy Wonderwall anymore. Mm. And now you don't even give us this. Made me sad. Anyway, that's it for this week's Week in the Tackle. Congratulations to Tim Horsey, who's getting married.
Poor Horsey woman. In the house. Horsey two, in the house.
Two horses in the house. He produced this program. That's Brian Dunseth. I'm Tom Rennie. If you listened as a podcast, you can watch on YouTube or Spotify. If you watched on YouTube or Spotify... aren't I handsome? See you next time.